This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
It's Friday, February 22nd. There are 20 hate crime victims a day in this country. Police say Jussie Smollett just made life harder on all of them. We start here.
People are going to say, there aren't really hate crimes going on.
The TV star turns himself in.
Look at the Jussie Smollett case.
But what do the charges and the circus in Chicago mean for the rest of the country? They're wearing white to the border, daring soldiers to bloody them up.
They're essentially a militia. And he's told these people to get ready.
The weekend standoff that's putting Venezuela on edge. And months after the midterms, North Carolina wants a do-over.
We will be redoing a congressional election for the first time in this country since 1974.
How election fraud and a son testifying against his dad created a congressional crisis. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. It was 3 weeks ago today that we began to see crowds gather in Chicago, New York, Hollywood, and these people were rallying to the defense of the actor Jussie Smollett. He said he had been the victim of a vicious attack. Now we know, of course, Smollett is no longer just the accuser, but the accused. Over the last 24 hours, police have not just publicly eviscerated him, they have charged him with a crime and booked him. You probably saw alerts popping up on your phone throughout the day yesterday, those pictures of Smollett hustled to his car, but ABC's Eva Pilgrim has been living this. All week, she was there at the courthouse as this went down. That's where we find her now. And Eva, can you just walk me through the day? You had eyes on Smollett all day. What were you seeing from him?
He woke up early. He came in at 5:15 in the morning to turn himself in. And that was when his day started. He was processed and booked and then taken here to the courthouse so that he could be waiting in preparation for this bond hearing. And as he was waiting, the police superintendent had that big press conference where he talked about the charges and laid out the case and the evidence, at least some of it, that they had against him. And then here in the hearing, the state attorney's office, the prosecution, laid out their evidence in great detail.
Text messages, phone records, social media records, bank records, surveillance video, and the receipt from the purchase of the rope was
that showed what they said was corroboration of the story of these two brothers who were once accused to be the attackers.
As more evidence was obtained by investigators, this investigation shifted from a hate crime to disorderly conduct.
Yeah, they really kind of laid out a story, they said, of how this all went down.
They did. They had lots of text messages between the brothers and Smollett.
Defendant Smollett texted Abel stating, "Might need your help on the low. You around to meet up to talk face to face?"
Both before and after the alleged attack happened.
Just less than 18 hours following the reported attack.
Well, hold up. If the original motive the brothers ascribed to him was he wanted more people to pay attention to this letter, the police superintendent, Eddie Johnson, now says Smollett wrote that letter to himself. So what do they think the motive was? Was it just money?
That's what police say. Police are saying that this was him being upset that he wasn't getting paid enough.
This stunt was orchestrated by Smollett because he was dissatisfied with his salary.
And he was hoping to get more attention.
By sending a false letter that relied on racial, homophobic, and political language.
And then when that didn't get enough attention,
Smollett paid $3,500 to stage this attack and drag Chicago's reputation through the mud in the process.
He was clearly impassioned.
Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations?
He was personally offended by that.
You know, as I look out into the crowd, I just wish that the families of gun violence in this city got this much attention.
So his family leaves.
Stay inside. All right, cameras, move on.
And as he walked out, you saw the security guard and people swarming him. As he was trying to get into this van, I mean, just dozens and dozens of reporters and photographers. and then he was in the car, and off he went to what appears to be Empire's studios. His attorneys did tell us in the courtroom that he was supposed to be at work after the hearing.
Wait, his people are telling you like, he's going to his acting job, like everything's normal?
He was scheduled to be at work.
Wow. Well, Fox says it's evaluating its options for Empire as this plays out. A different show where Smollett made an appearance has already been postponed. Meanwhile, Jussie Smollett's team says this, quote, law enforcement spectacle has no place in the legal system. They say even if the system wants to skip due process and go straight to sentencing, Smollett has not been convicted of anything, and he maintains his innocence. Eva, working hard on this story all week. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I want to go to someone who has prosecuted lying before. She's also prosecuted hate crimes. Sunny Hostin is a former federal prosecutor. Now she's ABC's senior legal analyst. She's a co-host of The View. Hey, Sunny.
Hello.
Well, those cops have been restrained all week, and you know, they seem genuinely angry about these charges. What did you think of them?
I think the charge is very important and appropriate. Chicago is a high crime area, and so those resources could have been used investigating real crime. And so I think that is why you saw so much anger coming from the superintendent. It always infuriated me when I was a law enforcement officer. I mean, people lying to me when I'm investigating a case means you just wasted the American people's resources. You wasted taxpayer dollars. You wasted my time. You lied to me. I'm going to charge you with perjury. It could also have a chilling effect on victims of hate crimes, real hate crimes, coming forward.
Yeah, but I was going to say, like, the attention, the outrage, like the circus of all this, is that disproportionate? I mean, does that have the chilling effect that you're talking about?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's disproportionate. One, it could embolden people to commit more hate crimes. But what people have to realize is hate crimes are up in our country. They have spiked in our country. However, the instances of false reporting are very low, somewhere between 2% and 6-8%. Now, what I think we are going to see is, one, victims of crime, they're not going to want to come forward because they're going to think that people are not going to believe them. Mm. That is why a lot of crimes are not reported. And two, people are going to say, there aren't really hate crimes going on. Look at the Jussie Smollett case.
Oh, is it this is a coin flip? Like maybe he did it, maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
You're saying 2%, that's not a coin flip.
2% is not a coin flip. And again, I think we saw that sort of with the Duke Lacrosse case.
Just 3 weeks after the allegations surfaced, a stunning blow to the prosecutor's case. The DNA collected from the rape kit did not match any of the lacrosse players.
And I know when I was prosecuting cases, that case came up a lot. And so rape victims didn't want to come forward.
Well, specifically, we really saw people in the African-American and LGBTQ communities really show up for someone they thought of as a victim of a modern-day hate crime.
Yeah, you know, I think so many people came out to support Jussie Smollett.
This is a racist, brutal, anti-black, homophobic attack of hate violence.
And a lot of those people are so embarrassed and so angry now. The thing that I would say to them is, you do want to believe victims. You should believe victims, because I spent hours upon hours upon hours in the homes of victims begging them to come to court to tell their stories. The one reason that they gave me when they didn't want to come was, no one will believe me. So the folks that believe Jussie Smollett shouldn't be embarrassed that they wanted to believe the victim. Jussie Smollett should be the person that's embarrassed, because he is the person that lied. And he is the one, if this is true, duped everyone.
And I do want to highlight one thing you said. If this is true, these are still just accusations from the prosecutor, but 8,000 hate crimes a year, according to the FBI, even more go unreported. Sunny, thanks a lot for coming by.
Thanks.
Next up on Start Here, it might seem like nothing's changed in Venezuela, but opposition leaders say tomorrow could change everything.
Nicolas Maduro is a dictator with no legitimate claim to power, and Nicolas Maduro must go.
Before the Trump administration came out and officially said Venezuela has a new president, there was the speech from Vice President Mike Pence.
The United States today calls on every nation to recognize Juan Guaido as Venezuelan's president and take the side of freedom.
Well, even after Guaido declared himself president, even after the international community backed him, Maduro is still the one running the place. And right now, Mike Pence is set to make his case again, this time just miles from the Venezuelan border. And if things seem still on the surface right now, our team on the ground says everything is very unstable. ABC's chief national affairs correspondent Tom Yamas is in Caracas. He's been talking to people. And Tom, what is this trip by the vice president going to look like?
I think the vice president's trip is just part of the Trump administration's plan to continue to put pressure on the regime of Nicolas Maduro here in Venezuela.
I hope the people of Venezuela know they have inspired us in the world. Over 50 countries stand with the people of Venezuela.
We've seen Senator Marco Rubio already on the border examining the hundreds of tons of humanitarian aid that the U.S. has sent over here. We heard President Trump in Miami earlier this week.
Socialism is dying and liberty, prosperity, and democracy are being reborn.
Calling Maduro a Cuban puppet, saying he was not a Venezuelan patriot, saying that Maduro was a dictator. All of these are elements to put pressure on the Maduro regime and to knock him down while they build up the interim president, Juan Guaido, which more than 50 countries have acknowledged as the leader of Venezuela. That being said, being in Caracas, Maduro still is very much in power.
Más vale prevenir que lamentar. Tome todas las medidas de aseguramiento.
And what he's announcing is that the Venezuelan military is going to be ready, that the Colombian military shouldn't try anything in trying to push that humanitarian aid into Venezuela because Maduro is rejecting it. He says he does not want the U.S., the way he describes it, rotten medical supplies, rotten food coming into his country.
Maduro said that stuff is not going to get in because Venezuela is not a country of beggars. How much does the country need that food right now and those medical supplies?
Well, he said our country is not a beggars. He made our country beggars.
When you've talked to people there in Caracas who are just desperate for this aid, didn't Guaido issue sort of a deadline where he said, we're going to go over the border, we're going to get that food and supplies whether Maduro likes it or not?
That's on Saturday, and Maduro has said the laws of the borders will be enforced. He's already shut off border crossings with Brazil. He's shut off communications with Aruba and Curaçao, other countries, island nations near Venezuela. There are rumors he may take other measures in the lead up to Saturday. We'll have to wait and see. Guaido says he wants 1 million volunteers. He has more than 500,000 who have signed up. He wants to bring that humanitarian aid in. There is a bridge. You know, you've seen the cargo bin sort of blocking that bridge where Venezuela closed off that border there. But it's a very porous border. It's huge. So they could sneak in humanitarian aid from different angles. But there are reports that troop movements are headed over there.
Oh, so you could see like an actual military engagement, perhaps, of these unarmed civilians that go over and try to grab some of this food and medical supplies?
It's one of the possible scenarios, Brad. We just don't know. There have been times in the past where women, Venezuelan women dressed in white, have crossed over to bring in humanitarian aid when situations like this have happened before. It's never happened to this level where the world is watching. You got to remember, there are groups, it's called El Colectivo, essentially groups of impoverished neighborhoods that Maduro has allegedly armed. They're essentially a militia, and he's told these people to get ready. So we don't know what's going to happen.
Just what a nerve-wracking thought. You've got women in white practically daring soldiers to get blood on them. You've got local militias determined to defend Maduro's regime. And then right across the border, we're seeing aid concerts from the billionaire Richard Branson today. The vice president arrives next week. Tom, we'll check in with you later. Thank you.
Thank you.
There are 435 seats in the House of Representatives, but right now we only know who should be sitting in 434 of them. For the last 3.5 months, we have seen a bare-knuckle brawl in North Carolina's 9th District over whether the Republican who declared victory was the recipient of fraudulent votes. Well, after that candidate, his team, and his family were all called to testify, the North Carolina Board of Elections says, we're going to hold new elections. It is time for a redo. ABC's John Verhovic has been tracking this from Washington, but really, he's been in the weeds on this for months. John, I beg of you, just the Cliff Notes version, please. How did we get here?
Right. So going back to the very beginning, This whole controversy erupted when the State Board of Elections uncovered some pretty interesting facts that led them to believe that there may have been election fraud committed.
It's the Democrats sounding the alarm. They're presenting affidavits from voters in Bladen County, claiming there was a scheme to use absentee ballots to tip the scales toward the incumbent congressman, Republican Mark Harris.
And it all centered around one political operative. His name is McCray Dallas, and he became accused in late 2018 of running an illegal absentee ballot scheme.
For 87 years, Emily Shipman has called Tar Heel, North Carolina, home. A few weeks before the November 6th election, a woman she'd never seen before came knocking at her door.
Basically, you'd go around to different houses in rural parts of this one county in North Carolina and collect ballots from people.
When they got through, she took it and went out.
In some instances, he'd have, you know, five or six people working for him going around and collecting ballots. And needless to say, that's illegal in North Carolina to collect ballots and to turn them in to the Board of Elections.
People are supposed to turn in their own absentee ballot, not something that could be filled in by somebody else.
Exactly. You're not supposed to collect them.
And as more details come to light every day, it becomes increasingly clear that a full investigation must be completed before the election can be certified.
And so basically that whole scheme became uncovered. The Board of Elections refused to certify.
North Carolina voters deserve to know the truth.
And this just set off this whole stream of chaos that led to the hearing that began on Monday of this week, which has just been an unbelievable affair.
Well, take me through this hearing, John, because I'd assume normally the candidate would say, I'm sorry, like, I don't know anything about this. If this year's absentee vote statistics are weird, it's not my fault. I should still be the congressman.
Right. And at the beginning of this week, you had Republican candidate Mark Harris saying, look, I didn't know anything about this.
You never heard one red flag?
No, not in that meeting. In that meeting, it was very
but
clear.
But at all, ever?
No.
This did not affect the outcome of the election. You should certify me the victor. And now at the end of the week, after this testimony that we heard from numerous people, including Mark Harris's own son.
Wait, his son testified?
His son testified and basically said, look, I told my father about this over a year ago.
I just didn't believe McCray because the numbers didn't add up. And I told him that collecting ballots was a felony, and I would send him the statute that showed that collecting ballots was a felony.
And basically Mark Harris said, look, I listened to my son, you know, but I knew what I heard from Dallas. I knew in my gut that, you know, I trusted him, and he went forward with it. And
wait, he's saying I didn't believe my son when he came to me with concerns?
He said, look, my son, I trust him. I respect him. He said he can be a little arrogant sometimes. But he also admitted that, look, my son was right, and I should have listened to him. And then in a pretty stunning moment during his testimony, Harris called for a new election.
It's become clear to me that the public's confidence in the 9th District seat general election has been undermined to an extent that a new election is warranted. Mr. Chairman, that concludes my statement.
Like California, the same person votes many times. You probably heard about that. They always like to say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. Not a conspiracy theory, folks. Millions and millions of people.
And it's also pretty notable when you have a Republican president who basically throughout his entire presidency has tried to put out claims that there was widespread voter fraud in 2016, that people voted illegally. And here you have an actual instance of election fraud in this country. And we will be redoing a congressional election for the first time in this country since 1974. And I think the significance of that cannot be overstated.
This is why I tell everyone, if you want to get wonky stuff explained clearly, you go to John Verhovic. Thank you, John.
Thanks, Brad.
And one last thing. At next year's Olympics in Tokyo, you're going to see several new sports, including rock climbing, surfing, skateboarding. This was all settled a few years back. The question now is what sports will be added to the following Summer Olympics in Paris? Squash did not make it. Karate is not being asked to return. But you know what sport Paris is proposing? Breakdancing. That's right. If you thought breakdancing was relegated to high school gyms or parking lots where guys are inexplicably carrying around cardboard, you have not seen the competitive b-boy circuit lately. There are judges, scores, crowds can fill arenas. Breakdancing was actually an official sport in last year's Junior Olympics. The gold medalist was a Russian teenager named Sergei. His breaker name, I'm not making this up, is Bumblebee. Now, it's just being considered for right now. The International Olympic Committee has to make the decision in the coming months. And you might think, come on, This is not a sport. It's really just an art form, an athletic art form, but not a sport. And breakdancing, people would tell you, well, what about figure skating? What about gymnastics? What about synchronized swimming? You're literally just putting this stuff to music and judging it. Now imagine if these sports went by breakdancing rules, where you only get a medal by winning a one-on-one battle. It's also the only sport you can practice during a school dance, so it's got that going for it. If you want to hear more from Sunny Hostin, by the way, The View comes in podcast form. You can check that out. Start Here is produced by David Rind, Josh Cohan, Tara Gimble, Kelly Therese, Laszlo Toth, and Lauren Efron. Thanks to Abe Velez, Jason Potts, Maria Kim, Elizabeth Russo, and Jeff Fitzgerald. Special thanks this week to Andy Fies, Kirat Radia, and Brandon Chase. Also to our partners at Amplify Media. Our executive producers are Steve Jones and Andrew Kalb. I'm Brad Milkey. See you Monday.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table.
What is happening here?
It's just beautiful chaos.
Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view.
To be honest, I was thinking about asking him for a foot massage, and then I just froze.
This is the best gig on TV.
And you know, anything can happen.
That is what we do here.
I'm not going to lie, the chair's a little small for my behind.
The View's Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.